Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Zipaku FY 2021 presentation. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Zakhele Ndlovu. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Irene. Welcome you all to the Zipaku FY 2021 results conference call. To take us through the presentation of the results is Zipaku Holdings CEO, Neil Crawford-Lazarus, and he's going to be joined by Duan Klassen, the acting CEO for Zipaku Cement, and Kenneth Cates, the CEO for Metair, straight after he gives us the presentation. For those of you who don't yet have the presentation, it has been uploaded on the website. You can go into our website at www.zipakuholdings.com. You should be able to find it on the homepage. However, if you're not able to download it, please do not hesitate to send me an email urgently to sakhele@zipaku.co.za, and I'll forward it to you as soon as possible. I'll hand over to Neil now to proceed with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Zakhele, and good morning to everybody on the call. Yes, this is a presentation on the financial results that we released yesterday afternoon. You would have seen both the SENS announcements as well as the financial statements on our website. We will be having a look at the financial review. We've got notes on the COVID-19 impact. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, just probably a reference and for your own information, if you had any questions on that. Look at the operational review outlook, and then there's appendices for any newcomers to the company that might want some additional information with regards to location and operations and so on. You'll find that in the appendices. I'm not going to look at that during this presentation either. The normal disclosure that you could also go through at your leisure, and then the financial review. The group showed a net profit of 19.9 million rand after tax, compared to the loss of 17.4 million from the previous year, mainly because of the turnaround that we saw in Metair throughout the year and cement having a very good second half after the lockdown four phase, specifically, I think from lockdown three onwards, the last 6 months, sales volumes picked up, and you'll see that in the results. The earnings per share, 0.078, as opposed to a loss of 0.082, HEPS of 0.06, as opposed to a loss of 0.08, and then the SEM, Zipaku Cement Equity Accounted Earnings of 16 million rand for the current year compared to the 500,000 that the earnings was the previous year. On the Metair side, we did see a reduction in turnover. We've had 2 months in Metair, which a little bit more than that, but no activity in Metair during lockdown five and four. Sales revenue of 634 million as opposed to 727 million. The EBITDA was 55 million for the period, compared to 34 million of the previous period. That would then indicate that the majority of this is in savings. Well, all of it is in savings as there is a reduction on the turnover side. The EBITDA margin, 8.7% as opposed to 4.8% the previous year, and EBIT, 5.2% at 33 million rand. The net profit after tax for Metair was 16.6 million rand compared to the loss of 500,000 a year earlier. On the cement side, we saw revenue of 2.4 billion rand as opposed to the 2.2 billion the previous year. EBITDA of 382 million, up from the 360 million of the year before, and a margin of 16% down from the 16.4%. Mainly here because of the lockdown, of course. Whilst the turnover was up for the year, you never really recover the overheads of a full month of no sales, and that distorts the numbers on the cost side. A reduction in EBITDA there, down to 16%. The EBIT margin of 9% at 220 million rand, and a net profit after tax of 44.4 million, compared to the 1.3 million the year before. The net profit of the group increased by 37.3 million rand from in the comparative period, from the 17 to the 19. Meteor turnaround process resulted in increased earnings, sustainable lower cost, income from disposal of underutilized assets. One of the first things that Kenneth did, the main focus when he rejoined on the 1st of April, was the utilization of the fleet. We reduced the fleet, but managed to improve also the return of the service providers, as their assets that they had working for us were much better utilized, and a win-win situation on both sides. The EBITDA and EBIT both improved by about 21 million rand compared to the previous year. On the cement side, equity accounting profit increased by 15.4 million rand, 9% increase in sales, and a 10% savings through the COVID-19 related cost reductions initiatives. Again, there, we'll get back to that. There was, temporary salary reductions and cutbacks. Some things were permanent, some things were temporary, just to get us through that period, but all contributed in bringing good results for us at the end of the period. And on Sparkle Holding side, a 4 million decrease in expenses. We'll have a look at that trend shortly as well. So with regard to cash flows, cash generated by the operation increased by 13 million. We only had a 34 million rand cash generated last year, that went up to 47 this year. The expenses are there to be seen, and not a lot of capex finance cost. Proceeds from assets, there's two main groups. The one is the Midrand property that we sold for 18.5 million rand, and the unused or underutilized transport assets that I referred to already in the previous slide of 8.8 million. For those of you looking at the financial statements, specifically balance sheet in more detail, you'll see that a newcomer to those lines are loans. The sale of these assets were vendor financed, and most of the owners are buying the assets over a three-year period. So there's also a short-term and a long-term portion of these loans, which will be new on the balance sheet. But good payers, money is coming in, and then from operations, of course, of services that they are providing to us. Net outflow in finance activity constituting 22 million repayment of bank loans and 16 million to lease payments. On the Sparkle Cement side, they started the year with a 500 million rand cash in the bank, generated 328 from operations, net financing cost 99. The interest paid was actually 110, but there's also interest received on the cash in bank, of course. So that is when we refer to a 450 payment later, that would be the 110 plus the 340 payment of bank debt that you see just two columns further. Sorry, I'm on slide 7 for those who is following the presentation. I basically paid through the first couple without communicating which slide I'm on, but I am on slide 7 at the moment. Proceeds from capital injection. You all recall that also when COVID really struck, and we had no production and substantial overage during that period, the banks required a capital injection before they were willing to entertain relief for the third and fourth quarter payments from cement. That resulted in a 125 million rand injection from DCP, which the shareholders agreed will be treated as a loan and will not be an equity injection. So strictly speaking, that was just equity moving from the banks to the shareholder, and not a reduction of the loan with regards to that specific 125, but we'll come back to that number as well again. So the year ended on a 480 million rand of cash on the cement side. Looking at costs, as I've mentioned, Sparkle Holdings has peaked on a 25 million in financial year 2018, has been steadily bringing it down every year with a 4 million reduction in the current year again as well. You'll see that basically a fifth of the expenses were normally non-cash items, portion being the and non-tangible from the acquisition of Metair. There's about 38 million rand in that that we wrote off over a 5-year period. And then the balance is purely Black Skull's vesting costs on the option schemes that is also completing next year. I think we've done all the vestings now. So that's why that number is getting smaller and smaller. But I think the important one is the cash portion of head office cost that has gone from the 20 million to the 11.8 or 7 million over the last 4 years. Also something that we are always asked to comment on or just give information on for those of you needing confirmation on your own models as with regards to the split. We present the split of costs for cement for the calendar year of 2020, including our financial year of 2021. That was slide number 9. Moving on to slide 10, the Metair loan reduced by 24%. We started the year with 93 million there, and again, was agreed that they received a payment holiday on the capital for the year, provided that we made a 15 million rand equity contribution or contribution from shareholders. That happened in August, where the 19 million then loan reduced to 75 in broad terms, and further repayments that started in January to March has reduced the loan now to 71 million. There is still 2 years to go after that. We have a final settlement of 45 million in March of 2023. Cost of the loan was at the time when we negotiated the debt relief on capital payments for 2020 calendar year. It was JIBOR plus 5.25, it went down to 5% at year end, and it will go down to 4.7 now in June as our EBITDA to debt has improved substantially during this period. So there's been a reduction at every measure point. The Parker Cement debt, original capitalized amount was 2.4 million in December 2015. That is down to 1 billion on 31st of December 2020. But as I just mentioned, there is 125 there that did revert to shareholders. So the total of the 2.4, there is still actually a 125 outstanding. That 1 billion has in the meantime gone down to below 900. We made a payment of 60 in February and a payment of 60 in May. So there's 900 left on that loan. But other than that, we would have commitments, or SEFSEM would have commitments to shareholders. The 125 advanced during last year, and of course the original standby facility when we increased the capacity of the plant from a 5,000 to 6,000 ton per day kiln. That amount outstanding is 528 and attracts interest at a 3-month JIBOR plus 4%. I'm now at the COVID slide 13, where I said I was not really going to spend time on. It's purely a matter of giving indications of what the impact was and how we dealt with it for anybody that is interested in how we dealt with that and what really was impacted during the period that we faced the lockdowns and even subsequent to that, with demand and specific tenders being slow to get off the ground as well again. Moving on to slide 14, the savings. I think this again refers mainly to lockdown 5 and 4 levels, where on the Metair side, executive management and employee salaries renewed by up to 50% for April to June. Just as part of the total turnaround strategy, we have reduced compensation costs by 6% in any case, and reduce transport costs by 5%. As I said, just much better utilization so that the service supply, or the suppliers of the services, are still getting a positive result from the change. Limited capex to maintenance and fixed cost reduction was a key focus area during this period. On the cement side, again, the capex was also revised heavily, cancelling or postponing projects that wasn't essential for the day-to-day operations, being able to continue. Optimize operational processes such as power consumption, revised over expenditure incentives, applied the principle of no work, no pay during the lockdown period. We also reduced bonuses during that period, and salary increases were frozen on the 1st of July. We did award those increases on the 1st of January, 6 months later, because it was also part of a longer-term agreement as to what increases would be given over a period of time. And during the period of no work, no pay, of course, income was supplemented by TAS funding that we did acquire and pass through to all the employees that did forego any money during that no work, no pay scenario of lockdown 5, specifically for cement. During lockdown 4, we were working on 50% of capacity, and everybody was able to at least work during that period. Moving on to the operational review, slide 16 on the Metair side. Again, the main focus for us in this period of 4 years of a downturn in construction industry and resulting in the same for building and construction material companies is continue to reduce the debt. And we've done that by another 23%, so we're sitting at 71 million rand there. We've also thought that during the year we would look at expansion of the market, and we have identified the Western Cape as an expansion opportunity, and we are in the process of establishing a site there and will be in operation in the Western Cape in Q3. The other area that they are focused for the 21 financial year was just to enhance customer focus to accurately understand their needs and deliver on your experience. That is something that we've been doing all along, and has been the strength of Metair, the fact that they could supply a very customer-specific solution to concrete needs that everybody had. On the cement side, the focus areas for 2021 was again the reduction of debt, and as we've mentioned, total debt the project debt came down to 1.17, and then 125 was moved to shareholders, so that it closed on the 1030 at year-end. Cost control was applied during the year, achieved a 10% savings by implementing all the initiatives to negate the impact of the lockdown. With regards to the social and labour plan, the finalisation of that was a focus area, and is still continuing to make progress, although not as quick as we would want to, but we are all comfortable that eventually we will get there. And then with the alternative fuels, also good progress were made there, also a project where the thermal substitution rate improvement is continuing. Also a question or a graph that we show regularly on our presentations, because it is a question that always comes up, is what was the impact of imports? And we'll see from here that on slide 18, the green line, that is the 2020 line, did fall off during the first period, the April, May period. Nothing did come in. So whilst in February it overtook the 2019 numbers, stayed flat for 2 months, but then started building up again. And then I think in September, when we saw in the anticipation of the strengthening of the rand, quite a lot of stock came in. With the result that there was only a 50,000 rand difference in 2019 being higher than 2020. And you'll see from the 2021 dotted line that also took off at speed. And the IJAC ruling remains an important one to be put to bed as soon as possible, and not really see any further protracted deliberations with regarding to implementation of restrictions on imports. We always give some feedback on the first quarter of the calendar year for cement, as well as their financial year in December, due to the fact that they're a subsidiary of DCP and we record up to March. So we always have the first quarters available again. Revenue increased 16% to 541 million year on year, of which sales volumes was really a 6% increase, and price increases 6 to 8%. And of course, the mix will give you the 16% that we're reporting on. On the other hand, and it's always the first quarter results is always impacted by that, Q1 profitability was impacted by the scheduled annual kiln stop for the maintenance shutdown. It was down for the whole of February, and that had an added complication, the fact that we had a very, very good second half of last year. Demand was so high that we were not able to stockpile clinker for the period in which the kiln would have been down. We were really selling cement as fast as we could produce it during the second half of 2020, resulting in an insufficient stockpile of clinker during the period that we had the kiln shut down, and that required buy-in of clinker, of course, at an additional cost, which has an impact on the comparable to the previous year. But overall, a good start to the year with regards to volumes and normal first quarter type results from that. We're looking at the outlook. Residential building expected to remain the subsector of growth through 2021. The immediate demand stimulus effect of cheaper mortgages extend to subside in the absence of improved production levels. Our group focus will still be the reduction of debt for both companies, to continue the press for cost control, and then, of course, Metair's expansion into the Western Cape. Ladies and gentlemen, that takes care of the presentation of the results that was published yesterday afternoon, and we can open the floor for questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you, however, wish to withdraw the question, you may press star and then two to remove yourself from the question queue. If anyone would like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star and then one. Our first question is from Charles Bowles of Titanium Capital.
Morning, Neil, Dwan, Kenneth. Thanks for the presentation. Good job on cost control. I had a couple of questions. We could maybe take them one at a time.
Sure.
The first one is just to understand the leases. I understand originally you sold your Midrand property and you did a sale and lease back over a period of time for that. When you sell the kit to contractors, is that on fixed leases back, or is that just contracted in on volumes delivered, or how does that work?
Charles, sorry, as far as the building is concerned, that was a straight, although not an official sale and lease back, because we owned the property and Metair leased from us, so they continued the lease just with a new owner, but that was the principle there of a sale of a building with a continued lease commitment from the Metair side. The vehicles, I'll let Kenneth just give you some color on that one.
Thanks, Neil. Essentially, with the fleet, we actually reduced the fleet, first of all, by 13% to be able to get the efficiencies up. And then we had a couple of vehicles that we sold to our existing subcontractors, which was already prior to COVID a deal that my predecessor had already signed. So effectively what we did was we reduced our own fleet, which ended up being that we probably only own 5% of the fleet. However, that will change going forward, because we believe the model should be a 50-50. But it wasn't that many vehicles that we sold to the subcontractors. It was more reduction in fleet size.
I got you. So just two aspects of that. When you with your subcontractors, you don't have guaranteed volumes or fixed monthly rentals. Is it payable on a volumes delivered basis? Is that how it works, Kenneth?
That's correct. It's a pure variable arrangement. So hence our responsibility to make sure that they get enough loads. If we're able to give them more loads, we're able to get a unit price reduction. And that's where we've got the efficiencies out of it. Essentially, we've, on the presentation, I think we said 5% reduction. It's actually between 5 and 8, depending on which distances we do. So probably a little bit more than 5% reduction overall.
I got you. And 50-50 is a model that gives you minimal cost with, I suppose, allowing for fluctuations in demand.
Correct. If there isn't a demand, we obviously have we give a contract to the subcontractors, and those eventually lapse and run month by month. So we at any point in time, even though we own 50% of the fleet, we are able to reduce the subcontractor fleet accordingly, and they don't mind it either because they know that you're reducing the cost, but you're giving them keeping the utilization up. So the model works for us. It's a model I prefer. My predecessor had a different view on it, but the model has worked for us. So that's the kind of model that we'd like to go back to.
Thanks, Kenneth. It said in the results that Metair terminated its CGIC cover because the cost of cover or availability of cover decreased, but then bought insurance to hedge against potential bad debts. I'm not entirely sure whether that leaves the business. If you could clarify?
I can do so. At COVID, we got a letter saying we had to reduce our cover by 30%. And then subsequent to that, another 30%, and subsequent to that, another 30%. So effectively, the CGIC cover was so low that it actually wasn't worth having it. So we took a view to look around in the market, and Santam was offering a product where we could self-insure as well as have insurance cover with them. So it's a dual effort of building up your own self-insurance with a protection mechanism that should you have a claim, that an insurance policy would kick in at the same time. And so far we've been building that fund up quite nicely, and I think that's what we're going to do going forward. So we still have some protection.
So instead of CGIC cover at a specific debt level, you're now taking cover on the aggregate book with a higher self-insured deductible, essentially.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Sorry, last question, if I may. Just to be clear, the debt in SEPCHEM is $581 million. That excludes the $125 million. And the $125 million, just to be clear, the commentary talks about a debt service reserve account of $152 million that includes the $125 million.
Yes. Let me just explain that one. You see, we always have a debt service reserve account. We require a debt service reserve account. And the debt service reserve account has to have the highest quarterly payment in the next year in it.
Okay.
So it had 152 million rand in it being the, let's say, third quarter payment for that year. But then when COVID struck, we knew we weren't going to be able to make the May payment, and we asked them to use the debt service reserve account for the May payment and then give us a relief for the third quarter and fourth quarter. And they said they'll only give the relief if we top up the debt service reserve account first. So we needed to refund the 125. It then stood on 152, and they used that whole 152 for the third quarter. But the way the requirement for a debt service account to exist. So, you know, that was an application of that account, and the existence of the account going forward was taken off the table. So there was the one payment score from the mechanism.
But the aggregate or shareholder loan as the 581 plus the 125?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, got you. Perfect. Thanks, guys. I'll come back just now.
Thanks, Charles.
Charles, if you have any more questions, you may go ahead. There's no one else in the queue at the moment.
Oh, tremendous. Two more questions then, if I may. The other one is community unrest in the Lichtenberg area. Could you give us some sense of what you're encountering? We hear different reports of what people are experiencing there.
Do I?
Charles, if I may. Thank you very much. Yes, there's a lot being said in the media of late, especially in view of the municipal service collapse and the likes of Clover closing shop and moving elsewhere. So apart from that, which is really in the town of Lichtenberg, we're based 35 kilometers outside of town, maybe up to 40 kilometers, depending on which road you take nowadays with the roads. So we've been working closely with the communities surrounding the plants, which is really who we're dealing with. And so as much as council is playing a role, it's more really us talking directly to those communities, which is also traditional communities led by traditional leadership structures. As much as there's been a massive vacuum in the leadership itself on that side, which is partly why we're delaying, you know, finalizing of our SLPs and acceptance from communities. It's been a challenge. It's more a leadership challenge because every year we find the new leadership representation and new groupings that claim to represent those communities. But in general, as far as our relationships are concerned, we find that, you know, post-COVID we get more rumblings in terms of job creation more than any of our commitments. We've got a number of initiatives that I think we've mentioned in some of the documentation we've circulated with the Torres Sesha non-profit company that we've established. So there's a lot of good work in the background with acceptance from communities, where we're going to do a lot of initiatives and build some projects for the benefits of those communities. So I think for the most part, the recent events is not really directly impacting us. It's more towards the people in the town itself. So yes, some of our employees live there. A lot of them do actually. And it's something that we as business also look to get involved with to try and resolve some of those issues. It's been a bit of a challenge of late because of all the changes again. The fact that it's been under administration, the fact that there's been some leadership changes also in the local government setup in town itself. So not really a major concern for us. The interactions that we've had with the communities have in general been positive with the recent, I think as recent as beginning of May, we had a session with Minister Montashe, and some of the community members, local government, as well as some of the other cement producers, which was very fruitful, where we basically paved the way of getting some of these SLP projects off the ground, more working jointly as industry, where we can have more focus on high-impact projects. So there's certainly been some delays in finalizing, but I think there's some positive involvement now from the minister himself, which I think will pave the way for resolving a lot of these issues in the communities, hopefully very soon.
Thanks, Duan. While you're there, your results talk about technical challenges that affected some incumbents. It seems to refer to more than one. Is you're referring to Lafarge, maybe differently. Could you tell us who you're referring to and how significant those volumes were that had come out of the market? And should we expect that as they resolve those issues, some of the volume benefit we've seen with the listed cement players might fall away?
Well, certainly, if we look at the official statistics, which has only been released recently, taking up to the third quarter of last year, and the overall market contraction, and if you look at our results, PPC's results, one can only conclude that some of the other incumbents must have suffered. We were aware of some technical issues from time to time, and it happens. We're not excluded. We all do these. We go through these challenges. But apologies for my voice, but we know about Lafarge that had some issues just as I think the lockdown struck. That was one of their bag houses that they needed to replace. And so as far as them is concerned, yes, that's something that we've experienced because we've been fairly close to that. Our employees are also living in the same town, so, you know, with cement companies, people know more or less what's happening to the rest.
Okay.
And then I think some of the others were mostly affected maybe by the supply of raw materials. It's also well documented that that there was a constraint on ash supply for a period of time last year. And so that would have affected some other incumbents as well.
Do you think that significantly impacts your volumes in the current year or not? As they come back or not?
As far as we're concerned, we were fortunate in that those have been resolved fairly quickly as far as supply of fly ash is concerned. I can't speak for some of the other incumbents. We've also got contracts with Eskom. We managed to resolve that fairly quickly. And so that obstacle has been eliminated. There's also been a supply problem with gypsum in the Inland region last year. I think partly because of the closure of one of the dumps from Protea Chemicals in Rustenburg. So we were only reliant on the remaining synthetic gypsum producer. And with the H2 demand that we saw, and it was also well documented, I think there was a capacity constraint there. So that would certainly have also affected some of the other role players, in as much as alternatives are to be sought at some premium.
Thanks, James. I appreciate the help.
Our next question is from Ron Goehler of Chronex Research.
Morning, all, and thanks very much for the call. Two questions from my side. One is on CEPSEM or cement margins, the EBITDA margin in particular. Can you just run through the last year? It's come up quite nicely. I see you talk about a 21% margin post the December period. But what has been driving the margins if you break it down into volume, price, and cost saving? And then just if we look forward over the next year, what could drive that margin potentially further? The volumes have been very good, so you know, further volume growth would be nice. But I'd just be interested in getting your view on that. Pricing also seems to have been pushed quite a bit, and whether there's much scope for further pricing. But then also, you know, are there any further cost savings that one would be able to realize in your next year? Thanks.
Thank you. If I may, Neil, so I think last year's EBITDA, we said H2 was particularly encouraging from a volume perspective, and that, of course, is with a certain amount of fixed overheads and fixed costs, that certainly will drive your margins. As far as pricing is concerned, it is, you know, there's the fact, as we mentioned earlier, if I look at the imbalance in supply from the incumbents that we mentioned with the previous caller, that certainly needs to be normalized at some stage, one would imagine. So how that will impact pricing, that remains to be seen. The other main factor that I think we've all spoken about as industry is the impact of imports. And with even if you look at the 5% contraction year on year in a market that would have contracted a lot more than that based on the three quarters of numbers that we've seen, that is something to be conscious of, and how that will impact on pricing, that remains to be seen. Going forward in terms of our volumes, we tend to agree that it seems that the market has sort of normalized back to the 2019 levels. Agree with the statements that PPC has made recently. We would certainly concur with that. As far as cost savings are concerned, we really had to dig deep in terms of our discretionary expenditure, our fixed costs. Neil mentioned what we did there. It was really tough on the business and on the employees. Of course, they all mature and understand that we needed to do this to just weather the storm. We certainly, at the same time, whilst you're suffering through things like the scenario during COVID and the lockdowns, you really look at ways of cutting costs and sustainably doing that. And we found a number of initiatives in terms of how we're going to run the business, related to sourcing of your product, related to decisions on which plants to run during high demand, low demand. When I talk about that, I'm talking about the winter and summer tariffs for Eskom, for instance. So there's a lot of scope there where one could tweak your business and have sustained cost savings going forward. So that is something, as much as we won't see the same amount of short-term cuts that we experienced last year, some of that we mentioned, we're going to have to recover. We need to look after our employees because we pride ourselves on the fact that our employees are the best, you know, available skills in industry, which was one of the benefits that we had when we started out a few years ago, starting with a new venture. So we prize that, and so we need to look after them. So that remuneration element, we believe, will normalize back to where we were in 2019 levels. But some of the others, we certainly believe there's some savings that we could sustain going forward.
Yeah. Rowan, just on that H2 EBITDA that you refer to, that was such a good number. I think it's important to appreciate that the H2 volume for last year was 62% of the annual volume. So there was it was quite a shift of volume to fixed overheads for a 6 month period that generated those type of numbers. You know, and in a year where you have the normalized curve and things spreading better over a year, and you have a 12 month overage that includes the normal stoppages and so on, it's not something that you expect to achieve out of the blocks again for the full period.
Okay, thanks very much for explaining that. And then the next question is more sort of a long-term strategic one. You, over the next year and a half, your debt repayments in Sephaku Cement come down, with the project finance payments effectively come to an end. Your balance sheet, depending on the cash flows you generate, it could be in quite a comfortable position. But what is the plan going forward? Is Dangote Cement still a partner that wants to stay in South Africa, first of all? You know, they were very helpful, I suppose, yeah, through the period when you had project finance debt, because they did come and help out at various times there. But are they still committed to South Africa? Has anything changed with in your discussions or relationship? You know, is Sephaku Holdings possibly able to pick up a higher percentage of Sephaku Cement? What is the game plan for Sephaku Holdings going forward?
Rowan, thank you very much. Yeah, I think I actually intended to say something about that loan and the repayment on that slide, and I did move on before doing that. So it's a good opportunity to just come back to it. Yes. So we're currently sitting at 900 million of bank debt, of which another 320 will be paid this year, leaving us with next year about 290 in the first three quarters, and then a bullet of 370 that will take care of the full 890 or whatever, 892, what the number is at the moment. Now, of course, it is also good to have some level of debt, and then we must also address the 580 that is owing to Dangote from that standby loan, because the moment that the bank debt is paid, then of course he's next in queue, and then he's not. It's not that he would say that needs to be paid before we can look at dividends, anything like that. He's appreciative of the fact that none of the shareholders got anything out of it while we were servicing debt, and we will talk about that profile. But one of the things that we're currently considering is also when we're putting in a corporate facility for cement to, let's say, take some of that final bullet of 370 and a portion of the Dangote loan based on our EBITDA, debt EBITDA levels of, let's say, 2 or something like that. One would be in a situation where one can easily service that and have funds available for shareholders going forward. I think that that position will be a comfortable one. And secondly, with regard to the DCP, yes, we've also, I mean, of course it's a question that comes up in our minds and it's a question that we ask. And on his side, his answer is always that he's investing for long term and he really sees that things will turn very positive in 2 years' time in South Africa. I'm not sure what he based that on, but that is his words. The flip side is also true, and that no asset is not for sale. So if we can agree to a price and we have someone that is interested in taking a larger stake in Sephold, that is also something that we can entertain, and it's always numbers that we're running. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't be doing our jobs.
Thank you. That's the end of my questions. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder. If anyone else would like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. We have a follow-up question from Charles Bowles of Titanium Capital.
Sorry, just maybe a little bit of clarity around the extenders. My understanding is that there were issues of ash from Eskom because of plant issues, and there were supply issues from ArcelorMittal given how they were running their facilities. How big is that supply from ArcelorMittal into the extender market? Would that significantly have impacted, for example, AfriSam sales, given that they're big suppliers into the extender or blender market?
Charles, yes, if I may, Neil.
Yes, sure.
So as far as the ash, firstly the ash, which is what we're familiar with, so we can comment on that. Yes, there was a period of time, I think, where Eskom had renewed a lot of these supply contracts, and that was just a decision across the board. And so you would have read in the media that there's a number of contracts that they awarded last year. Some of those incumbents and contracts were to new incumbents that didn't have any processing plants. So in that period And it happened to be just before the major or the level 5 lockdown and carried on for a period of time after that. That's really when ash supplies became an issue. For the clinker manufacturing incumbents, of course, you can always resort to limestone extension. So we had some alternatives which maybe not everyone had. So we were fortunate from that perspective. As far as the Mittal supply is concerned, yes, we know that there's been quite a bit of a downsizing. Some of those blast furnaces have not been running. So I can only imagine that would have affected the supply into the, specifically the inland region. Because a lot of those stockpiles, you know, you need to use some of the fresh slag, and some of the old stockpiles is not really something that one could bank on, and depending on the inventory levels that they would have had, I personally don't know what those levels were. So that would have been probably something that is more of a longer term until the steel production normalizes.
That's very useful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. It seems that we have no further questions on the lines. I would like to hand back over to Sakile for closing comments.
Thank you very much, Irene, and I'd like to thank everybody who's participated on this conference call. For any further questions that you may have following this presentation later on, you can use the contact details on the last slide of the presentation to send me your questions, and we'll respond as quickly as possible. And I would like to wish all of you a very good day, and goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.